Welcome to Joe Trippin' Friends. This is Joe Trippishin. We're speaking today with singer-songwriter Frederick Reed and his memories of his friend, Jeff Buckley. Fred, welcome again. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Thank you, Joe. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Good, good, good. You knew Jeff pretty well. You mentioned in the last podcast you were kind of like a big brother to him. What was his relationship to the music scene in New York?
Well, his relationship was basically he came on the scene and took it over. It's like he was the brightest star on the New York music scene for a while. All the other musicians I knew, the other guitar players especially, wanted to play with him and were shocked when he picked a relative unknown to be the other guitar player in his band. You had Gary Lucas wanted to be his guitar player. Well, actually, Gary wanted Jeff to be in his band at first. And then you had guitar players like Chris Cunningham, who was playing with a lot of people at the time. Everybody wanted to play with Jeff, basically, or produce Jeff.
Would you say that he had more effect on the New York music scene than the New York music scene had on him?
Symbiotic relationship, because certainly the avant-garde of New York and all the fringe elements, he was attracted to the fringe elements of the New York City scene, so they both fed on each other, I would think. Certainly Rebecca Moore, Rebecca Moore with his girlfriend at the time, and so all their theatrical experiments that she was involved in and her parents certainly were an influence on Jeff, and he performed in a lot of those. And he had a lot of friends that were singers and actors that he would hang out with. And then, of course, he became the darling of WFMU, and he did a lot of shows on WFMU, and WFMU wouldn't be considered commercial radio by any means. He was interested in the fringe element and just drank it up.
So what were your thoughts when you first heard that Jeff was hooking up with Gary Lucas and performing in his band?
Well, Gary's a great guitar player, quite a talented musician. In my opinion, he isn't the greatest singer or frontman. He's a great guitar player. And so I always thought that if Gary's band, Gods and Monsters, had had a great singer, a singer that stayed with them, they could have been quite a going concern instead of just like kind of like a cult band or whatever. And so I know that Gary really, really recognized the potential in Jeff and desperately wanted him to stay with Gods and Monsters, and was quite disappointed when Jeff left. But then Jeff basically is a free bird, you know, he free spirit, and certainly didn't want to be controlled or smothered by Gary, you know.
Did you think that Gary was controlling and trying to smother him?
Well, Gary, from what I've heard and from my own experience, yes, Gary can be quite a control freak. You know? And
well, you knew Gary before you met Jeff, is that right?
Yeah, I knew Gary from, you know, Gary played at Fez a lot, and Gary was around, and Gary, a bunch of other musicians that I knew had played with Gary, Jonathan Cain and Ernie Brooks, and, you know, I'd heard a lot of Gary's stories from musicians on the scene. Gary is amazingly talented, but he is a very, very intense guy. And in some ways, I know that Gary and Jeff were like oil and water. Jeff wasn't the kind of musician that you could stick a set list in front of and tell him, well, you're going to sing this, this, and that, and play for so many bars and stand behind me on stage while I play, you know. Gary was like reading Jeff the riot act for standing in the front of the stage, I know, after one show, and saying, he's the front man, I'm the front man, you know, so you can only imagine.
You told me once that you were hanging out with Jeff, I think it was maybe in your apartment or your studio, and Gary called looking for Jeff. Could you just relate that story?
No, that was at Fez. That was at Fez,
okay.
You know, when Gary would call looking for Jeff, and Jeff is like, don't tell him I'm here, don't tell him I'm here. He told me to say that, and he also told Alan Cavallina, the booking agent at Fez, don't tell him I'm here, never tell him I'm here, you know.
And was that after he split from Gods and Monsters, or is that before or during? Or
I think that was during. I don't think that Jeff... I'm not sure of it. If Jeff, like, said, oh, I'm not in Gods and Monsters anymore, or whether he just took a passive-aggressive kind of stance and tried to hide from Gary for a while. Uh-huh. I'm not sure what was going on there, but for a while, Jeff was actively avoiding Gary. Gary's, like, the kind of guy that he wants to get things on the road and push it as hard as he can, and he would push as the musicians around that worked with him, and I know Jeff didn't like that.
What type of relationship did Jeff have with other musicians in the New York music scene that you can recall?
Mostly his relationships were very, very friendly and very, very supportive, but it's just when you tried to nail Jeff down to any kind of big commitments, he had his own muse. Jeff had his own muse that he was following. So Jeff would be glad to show up at, like, your session and play a little guitar or play auto harp or sing back up and be part of the whole thing. But when it came to being ordered around and making some major commitment or whatever, Jeff wasn't really into that so much. You know, he had his own muse to follow, so...
Did he ever discuss his relationship with his record label, with Sony? Because you knew him before he signed the deal with Sony, about a year or so before.
Yeah, yeah.
What was his relationship with, like, the music business in general? What was his opinion about that?
Never, you know, he never really stated the opinions directly, although I know he sometimes said he was afraid of the suits, you know, like he'd have a good time at soundcheck and stuff like that. I noticed that pressure didn't start to build, not so much right after he signed with Sony, but after the record was out. And they realized...
No kidding.
Yeah, and then the pressure, then you started to see a lot more people coming to the gigs, a lot more control, like... All of a sudden, there was a sound man with him that Sony hired instead of me doing the sound at Fez. This is right before I went on tour. All of a sudden, like, they had their own sound man. And I know that the band was unhappy. I forget the guy's name, but Mick particularly was telling me, Mick Grundle, his bass player, was like, oh, this sound guy doesn't understand us as a band. I wish you were behind the board. This is when they were about to go on tour and stuff, and I noticed the pressure building on Jeff, and actually I gave them some pep talks at the time, right before they went on tour. I think it was that first European tour. It was a sold-out room, and Sony had bought like 50 tickets, and I think Jeff was kind of upset with that the admittance to his show was going to be so controlled, because he basically wanted to have just a regular kind of gig that he would normally have at Fez, and he kind of realized at that point that he couldn't, that there was just going to be kind of a tight control over who's going to be in and out. You know, he couldn't just let anyone in he wanted to, or he could let a, like, a certain amount of guests in that were his friends, but then there was, like, just a lot more industry types and suits coming down and business people, as opposed to his normal show. So I think he felt some frustration with that.
Did that affect his performance in those shows? Did you see any difference in it between those shows and the shows that the suits were not attending?
Once he started to play with a band, there was a large difference between the shows that he used to do solo. Normally he would do the solo shows at Fez. And so then when he started playing with the band, that was a big difference. It was louder all of a sudden, you know, the set list was pared down. He had less opportunity to go off just into a solo flight that he would when he was performing on his own. He had to play songs that they knew. Once he started playing with the band and he was signed with Sony, things started to get a lot more conservative. in my opinion. And it wasn't only my opinion. Nick Hill, I think, felt the same way. Ellen Cavallina, the booking agent at Faz.
Nick Hill, of course, from WFMU.
Yeah, who recorded a ton of Jeff Buckley shows and had known Jeff for years. You know, Nick had been involved with the Tim Buckley tribute at St. Anne, so... You know, yeah, there was a major difference. Nick had complained to me about Sony, but I never felt that Sony really bothered me very much. I'm trying to remember the guy's name that was the major A&R guy that signed Jeff at Sony.
Steve Berkowitz, right?
Yes, Steve Berkowitz. He never really bothered me very much when I was working at Fez, although, you know, I would see him scurrying around and he would be somewhat tense because I'm sure Steve had a lot of pressure from Sony on him himself. And as Steve, I think, was trying to be a nice guy to Jeff and not put a ton of pressure on Jeff, I think. But then just the fact that he was there and he was from Sony, though, would rub people like Nick Hill wrong or some of the other New York scenester types, you know.
Yeah.
Because Nick is also a free spirit, and Jeff is a free spirit, so, you know, but then again, it's just the machinery itself. As Jeff was getting more and more ready to go on tour, you know, there was more pressure. Like I said, all of a sudden they had a sound man coming with them that was going to go on the road, and then, of course, their management was getting ready, and there was a... They had that record come out, which was doing well, and Grace, you know, and everyone loved, and so there was a lot more pressure on them to play the songs the way they were recorded and to pull the thing off live.
The books that I've read, the Jeff Buckley biography books, they talk about Jeff's ambivalence toward the music business and how it took him many months to decide whether to actually sign the song.
Mm-hmm.
There was talk about, oh, you should, and from a lot of his friends, there was a lot of, advice given that, oh, you should go with the indie route, sign with the indie label. But eventually he did, and it was Jeff's decision to sign with it. He wanted to, I guess he did have this ambivalence. He wanted to be big. He wanted to be recognized. He wanted to make a big splash. But at the same time, like you say, he was a free spirit. And often those two don't mix very well.
Yeah, well, I don't think he wanted to be Britney Spears or Josh Groban. He was driven, though, to get his music out there, but he was artistically driven. He was constantly experimenting with his voice, you know, and his song interpretations. In my opinion, he was an incredible singer, probably the best singer, one of the best singers I ever had, incredible performer. And I think his genius was in song interpretations. The way he interpreted covers and things like that.
Right. Hallelujah and all.
Yeah, in my opinion, his version of Hallelujah is the definitive version of the song. Just as Jimi Hendrix's version of All Along the Watchtower is the definitive version of that Dylan song.
Right.
He was a genius performer, a genius singer, and a genius interpreter of all sorts of genres, you know, whatever genre the song came from. And he loved all kinds of music. He made it his own.
He seemed to have such a wide encyclopedic knowledge of music. You mentioned how he knew all the musicians on Miles Davis' record you were playing at Fez at the time. And I mean, did he ever mention his favorite musicians or people that he aspire to be like, to emulate, or to even jam and play with?
He admired a lot of different kinds of music, but, you know, he wouldn't state his favorite musicians directly. He loved all kinds of music. He loved blues. Certainly, though, he admired Led Zeppelin, you know.
Yeah.
Both Jimmy Page and Robert Plant were huge influences on his singing and playing.
Yep.
And he certainly admired Leonard Cohen as a songwriter. And Peter Gabriel. He didn't cover any of Peter Gabriel's songs, but I remember him talking about Peter Gabriel with me. Thought he was amazing.
Well, he also was actually an audience member at Fez when he wasn't on stage. And I know you had a number of great musical acts there. In addition to Jeff, you recall on any shows that he attended that he was, like, you know, particularly fond of?
Well, he was a huge admirer of Joni Mitchell. And he came to her show. And I do remember him seeing... He used to hang out at Fez all the time, so he came to see a lot of acts there. I know Jeff came to listen to the Mingus Big Band. I know he appreciated jazz. Yeah, we talked about David Byrne at one point. He really liked David Byrne's songwriter from writing from the Talking Heads. We talked about the blues a lot. He had a lot of blues influence in his guitar playing, as well as like the speedy prog rock players.
Now, as this free spirit and musical genius was floating around music scene in New York City, did he ever discuss with you his own feelings about being a performer and his own maybe goals and aspirations?
Well, he discussed his feelings with me as a performer sometimes. He didn't really state any like direct goals, although he used to tell me he used to like to let the song or the music take him over, almost like a meditative state or almost like a drug state. Like the high that he got for performing was like almost like a drug high, or even more intense than a drug high. And he used to like performing at Fez because the room was haunted.
How so?
Well, he, you know, we would talk about the ghosts in Fez occasionally. You know, with some of the performers that played there repeat times, we would talk about the ghosts of Fez. And he told me, well, he one of the reasons he liked playing at Fez was because it was haunted. You know, he could...
No kidding.
Yeah, he could feel the spirits in the room.
Did he ever talk about otherworldly things? I know you mentioned about the collective unconscious. You two had a discussion about.
Yeah, that music was like electricity, and certain forms of music became more magnetized at times and would go across the world like wildfire. Like we were talking about psychedelia at one point, how psychedelia, the certain way of playing guitar in the 60s with feedback and echo effects and stuff like that. And we're talking about how that like took over like wildfire, and then there were certain movements, musical movements like rap that took over, hip-hop that took over like wildfire. And talking about the collective unconscious, it wasn't one performer that did a certain kind of music. It kind of sprouted up in a lot of different areas at the same time, like prog rock did, or maybe the blues. Blues didn't just come from one performer, it was a hybrid, and it sprouted up all over the American South, and then in the inner city, Chicago, Kansas City.
So, I don't know if you would call that mystic, or just otherworldly, but was that, you think, a big part of who Jeff was?
Jeff was pretty interested in spiritual things, but I think music was his religion. I think basically that some people meditate, some people go to church, some people, well, Jeff basically put his spiritual yearnings through his music. You could almost say that his musical impulses were spiritual or almost religious, and that, you know, he would sacrifice his time and on stage to, he'd give himself over to the muse or whatever. And certainly a lot of his performances, I would say, were otherworldly.
Certainly, having seen some of his performances, at least on tape,
mm-hmm.
and reading about the audience's response and how they were transported, if music was his religion, he was certainly a high priest of that religion.
Yep. It's too bad he died so early, because he could have been the Pope.
He could have been the Pope. Very, very true.
Seriously, I mean, that was what was such a shame about him dying when he died. I think if they had gotten that second album together, gotten the team together like they had with Grace, and a good set of material, you know, with a producer that he was in sync with, then it would have blown up from there. It was just such a shame, him dying when he did. For years, I couldn't listen to Grace. I love the record when it came out, but after he died, I found it very, very hard to listen to Grace or to listen to him. It took me many years before I could comfortably listen to Jeff again and accept his loss.
It is a tragic loss, mm-hmm. but we are all, I think, all richer for the music he left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, Fred. We have one more podcast to go. So join us for the next podcast. Fred will share with us his last memories of Jeff in the year before his death.